And welcome back to the Constitutionals Podcast. I'm your host, Chad White. If you didn't know, this is the premier podcast for the website, cpluscomedy.com. Like I just said, it's a website. Go there, episode 289.5. Here we are with a very special, you know what that 0.5 means? It means I've got a little something special for you, which I interrupted myself with. On this Wednesday morning, I have a comedian of note that has worked on Earth to Ned, Raya and the Last Dragon as a character, appeared in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania as a waiter, I believe. I don't know. I've never seen the movie. I'm an adult. I have seen Ray and the Last Dragon. It's great. I love that movie. Very true. She, you know, it's a woman or somebody who identifies as one, was on season 9 of NBC's Last Comic Standing, as well as Last Call with Carson Daly. I'm talking about somebody who has appeared on the Doughboys podcast. Someone who appeared on Never Not Funny just last week. The theme song is 40 seconds long. 40? 57 seconds. The theme song is 57 seconds long. I've been talking since the 40-second marker, because that's when I allow for that to happen. We are now officially 2 minutes and 20 seconds in, or so. I have yet to mention the comedian's name. It's Sierra Cato. Excuse me. Don't pronounce it the way that is written, Chad. Yes, I spoke to young Sierra over there. That is not her that's not her stage name. Sierra Cato. She's a fantastic stand-up comic. A great TV writer. And wouldn't you know it, she also acts. We talked about her new special Funt. F-U-N-T. That special, again, is Funt, F-U-N-T. And you can find it wherever you watch specials. She's a fantastic comedian, and she really works that stage when she's up there, when you're watching it. I mean, this is something I mentioned to her. The direction, the producing, it was fantastic. And you know what I think, now that I'm thinking back on it, a lot of it had to do with the colors. She's wearing a green top. The colors of the stage are like purple and blue. But there's a lot of dynamic camera work. There's a lot of great stuff she's doing on stage. She's addressing the audience. She's looking down at people and talking to them, as opposed to what I see in a lot of comedians, because I talk to a lot of comedians, nobody do. Is that they're looking out into the audience and just, they're in the abyss. But to me, it appears as though she's looking at each individual audience member, which is just crazy to say the least. I think she's a very funny person, and I'm so glad I got to sit down and talk with her, to talk about Funt. We also talk about what kind of food she likes to eat over there in Los Angeles. She's from SoCal. I'm from Atlanta, so we compared what we were able to eat. She's also, I mentioned that she does stand up. She also writes. We're here to talk about Funt. It's available with the great people at Comedy Dynamics. Lovely people. Love those people. They're fantastic people over there at Comedy Dynamics. They really know what they're doing. But Sierra is also a standing up comedian. As I mentioned before, she was on Last Comic Standing, Last Call with Carson Daly. She did some stuff for Just for Laughs, Justs for Laughs. She also, as an actor, as I mentioned before, Ant-Man and the Wasp 3, Quantumania? Is that 3 or is that the fourth one? Let's go through Ant-Man's. The Sex Lives of College Girls, she was also an actor. She also appeared in The G-Word with Adam Conover. She also voiced characters on Raya and the Last Dragon. the movie. She appeared in Earth to Ned, as well as writ on it. And Close Enough on HBO Max, which is the follow-up, not follow-up. It's another show that J.G. Quintel did for the Warner brand. Oddly enough, Earth to Ned on Disney Plus and Close Enough on HBO Max have both been pulled. So you cannot watch those shows at all, which sucks. Because I think Earth to Ned is I think it's fantastic. I thought it was very funny. It's about an alien who came down to Earth to destroy it, but he ends up learning about human ways. Was Gina Carano on an episode? She was. Was this before she got in trouble for saying horrible things? Yes, it was. Did I watch that episode? I'm like not even kidding. The day that she got in trouble. I did. I watched the episode and I was like, who is this beautiful woman? And then then literally like a couple hours later, I got like emails in the C+ Comedy email account. Press releases, like emails from Variety and Deadline. I was like, oh boy. I was like, who is this woman? And like, oh no. She's also going to be on some shows that are coming soon. She's writing on the Golden Axe series, which is based on the Golden Axe video games, if you know those. So that series is going to be on Comedy Central later. I don't know, at some point. We'll see. Next year? I don't know. I don't want to put a timetable on it. There's the Exploding Kittens show, which is based on the board game, coming to Netflix at some point. Again, I have no idea. And some other stuff. Also, this was also emailed to me. She will be featured as in one of the episodes of the PBS stand-up comedy documentary series, Roots of Comedy with Jesus Trejo. And that'll be available to stream for free in May on PBS's app and the PBS.org website. She's got a lot of stuff cooking, and I believe she's engaged. So be on the lookout for that that wedding too. All right, let's roll through this stuff again. This is the longest intro I've ever done. Let's roll through everything again. Who cares? It's my show. Who cares? You all came here for Sierra. Uh-oh, who's this character? Who's this guy? I'll stop. Let's roll through everything again. Sierra Cato. Funt, F-U-N-T. You can find that wherever you get your comedy specials. Amazon, Apple TV, YouTube. You can, for purchase, you can go over there and buy it. It's great. You know, right now, it's on sale right now for $3.49. Whoa. Excuse me, for $11.49. But you can rent it for $3.49. Whoa. I don't know if that's a thing for everybody or just a thing for me. Let's go to Incognito and pull up that same Amazon website. No, I can't log on. Okay. Anyway, Funt, F-U-N-T. Check it out wherever you find those things. In May, PBS stand-up comedy documentary series, Roots of Comedy with Jesus Trejo. You can find that, thanks to PBS SoCal, on PBS app or PBS.org, or find the all six episodes of the series streaming May 24th on PBS's YouTube channel. And then you can find it all across your PBS stations across the country, June 21st at 10 p.m. Okay, I got fun. I got that. Oh, and then the Exploding Kittens. That's coming soon to Netflix. She wrote on that show. And Golden Axe. I don't know what she did. I don't know if she wrote. I don't know if she was an actor on it. But that'll be coming to Comedy Central at some point in the future. So there you go. And you can follow Sierra on IG at Sierra Cato. You can follow her TikTok, Sierra Cato. You can follow her on the web, sierracato.com. As for us, if you want to see a video version of this interview, head to youtube.com/C+comedy, where you can see video versions of all the interviews as well as every podcast. available to you over there. You can subscribe to every podcast like Late Night Lately, the Late Late Night Show, and LinkedIn Logs, the Job Show. What else is going on? TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at C Plus Comedy. Me at Chad Black White. Thank you for listening and enjoy Sierra Cato.
Hey.
Hey, Sierra.
Hi.
How's it going?
Chad. Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I was actually just watching the rest of your special. It was fantastic.
Oh, thanks for watching. I appreciate it. I know it's hard to get anybody to watch anything for longer than a minute. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very funny. The secret to these, I've been doing these interviews for 10 years.
Oh, no. Oh, sorry. I think I lost a connection in the middle there.
Okay.
Are you able to?
Oh, yes. All right. How are we good? Are we good now?
I think so. Yeah.
Awesome.
But sorry, I missed what you said.
Yeah. No worries. I was just saying, like, when I first started, I watched everything, and now I don't. So when I sit down and sit and like watch somebody something, it really means something. And I need you to take that to heart.
Oh yeah, no, it is taken to heart. I appreciate that. I
I'm just kidding. Don't do special. That.
No, I do. But wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for having me on this. I'm very excited to talk to you.
Yeah, I know you're a busy person. I saw you were on Never Not Funny, and I've known you since Doughboys a couple of years ago.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Nick Weiger, I had worked with, and he was kind enough to have me on, and him and Mitch are so fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks.
And you popped up on Earth to Ned as one of the one character a time. And I thought that was a very funny thing to see, especially like, you know, I guess it's because people are around, you know, and say, hey, why don't you wrote on the show? Why don't you pop in as a character?
Oh, yeah. No, that was nice of them to let me do that. And then I think, you know, Eliza Skinner, who was the head writer, is also a performer. So I feel like everybody was kind of dabbling in multiple things. And she did some voices for some of the characters. So I feel like, yeah, it was a very like collaborative, multi hat wearing situation.
Do you like doing that? Do you like writing with a bunch of people and then having to shift gears and go and write for yourself? How is that for you? Like what kind of tool set do you utilize for that?
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, very similar. I love writing for other people and or other shows and like with other people, because I think I got into comedy at large just because I like funny people and like laughing and being around funny people. So it was kind of like, oh, well, if I can work in a setting that has that, that's great. So stand up, I didn't realize, I think going in, it can be like isolating in the creative part, because, you know, you're often writing alone and you're kind of writing for yourself. You're on stage alone too, but it is collaborative when you're off stage and, you know, hanging out with other comics and stuff and watching other comics. But I think as a result, yeah, I kind of love the writer's room, because you get to just always be with other funny people, always working towards kind of like a common goal. Oftentimes, you know, it's the showrunner's like main vision. So you're helping them, you know, figure out what they want to do best. But like, yeah, I guess I've been lucky too. I've worked in a lot of good rooms with a lot of good people and funny people that we all share the same sensibility. So it hasn't been like fraught with drama. And I've worked for really, really good bosses who are both like open to, you know, taking others' ideas, which I think is pretty rare. I mean, I think that's a good, you know, that if I were a boss, I would want to be that kind of person who's just like not always like my idea is the best. But it's hard to come by. I think a lot of people, you know, it's not the default. So.
Yeah. And you seem like a very collaborative person, especially, you know, just telling me how open you are and willing to work with somebody who's willing to work with you. You right now in your career, with the people that surround you, you know, with Eliza Skinner, with Nick Weiger, those type of people are willing to let someone else be funny, especially if they can just, you know, step aside and say, hey, this person's, you know, running on 100 right now. Let me show the world to them. And I think that's what it takes. especially since the strikes. We had a second set of strikes in the it's with the actors and writers. You know, I think the first ones I remember at least were when I was in high school in 2005, 2006, something like that. So it's we're now that we all kind of have this common goal, it just makes sense to not want to be that one asshole who's like, I'm gonna hold all the comedy stuff for me and no one else can get any of this.
And I mean, you know, it's like the, I think you're totally right that the strike kind of reminded everybody of that, because I think it can be such a, you know, oh, you know, when there's a movie star, it's like, oh, that's the one person and they put in so much work to make this movie happen. But it's like, no, there are hundreds of people, like thousands maybe, like, you know, depending on the movie, who made it happen. So I think the strike, yeah, was really like, oh, hey, we're all doing the same thing here. We're all kind of have a common goal. And at least the actors and the writers in that scenario, and crew members too, who are like out there in solidarity, you know. So I think, yeah, that was like a good, I think I just was in, I was lucky enough to like be in a writer's room right kind of shortly after the strike was concluded. And like, I feel like the vibe overall, you know, credit to, again, the people I worked with, but was just like, oh, hey, we're just coming off a strike. Like, we are here to, you know, work together, and no one's like the star here, you know, in the sense of just like, I think collective action kind of reminded us like, hey, it's fine. We're all like union people. So yeah, that was cool.
Now, turning back to Funt, which is the name I have to be sure to pronounce correctly, not
Oh,
go
you
back a
nailed
couple
it.
of
You
letters.
nailed it. Sure.
What was it like, you know, speaking of crew, with that, what was it like preparing for that, writing for that, choosing the stage, choosing the direction? Because it feels like this giant, I mean, I'm not calling out your height or anything. I know you're not
Well,
the
I am
tallest
very
person in
tall.
the world.
Sure,
Yeah,
sure.
you're very tall. You're 6'2".
Obviously, yeah, 6'3", but that's okay. No, I'm
Six three, six three.
Yeah,
Excuse me, I was
that's
shortchanging
okay.
you.
That's okay.
But like I was watching on the stage, and you have this commanding presence. You were like you're taking up the entire stage, yet you're standing right there in the middle. Telling your jokes, and everybody is just focused on you. What was it like, you know, developing for that and having to capture all these angles and make sure that this thing was larger than life?
Oh man. I mean, you know, that's very kind. I think credit to Comedy Dynamics and you know, Matt Cubis, who was the director, and like oh, Cisco Henson, who is, you know, all these wonderful people, Anna Roberts. They are just pros at shooting comedy specials. So I came in, you know, with my material that I'd been working on for a long time, but in like the months leading up, dialing it into an hour that felt cohesive. And you know, the skills that I had developed from doing stand-up or whatever, that's what I brought to the table. And they were really like pros on, hey, this is all the cameras, there's one over there, there's one over there, but like don't even really worry about it, because they know how to, like, you know, follow me. If I'm gonna move that much, I don't move that much. But you know, they were very like, you're in good hands, we're gonna make you look good, like just focus on the creative part, right? And so you know, I got to make fun additional decisions, like, oh, what am I going to wear? You know, and like, how is that going to contrast with the backdrop? And like, very, you know, fun things like that, that you have to do. But I think like it was really credit to them to let me just focus on the material, focus on making sure that, you know, it feels comfortable. And, you know, for instance, there's always in tapings, you know, you might flub a line and then have to walk it back and say it again, because you know you want everything to be very clear and funny. So like I think that happened maybe twice throughout the taping, but like, you know, they were very much like, hey, if that happens, it's totally fine, we just walk it back and then you do it again and then the audience hears it again, which is not what we, you know, are used to in regular stand-up live. Like that would be the weirdest setting. So that was like the one different thing maybe of a taping that I hadn't that I've actually experienced before. I've watched people do it before in other tapings, but I myself was normally like, you got to get it right on the first try. So that was an adjustment. And yeah, I think like it was just, you know, I remember when the first time I ever did stand up for TV, I think, well, it might have been the second, but it was like when I did Last Comic Standing. I remember that was like a big, you know, deal for me. And I was young, but I think somebody, like leading up, I was pretty nervous, and somebody gave me great advice. I was like, you guys, I think they told everybody this, so it wasn't just to me, but it was like, you guys do this all the time. You know, this is just what you do all the time. And so that's kind of what I think of every time there's a bigger taping or something that's a little bit, you know, more lights and glamour for stand up. It's like, oh, we do this, we've done this hundreds of times and maybe thousands. So like, just do what you do. And then like, the only difference is that there are some cameras there to capture it. But and then they made it look great at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, you know, so, it's also part of, you know, who you are too, as a comedian and a presenter. You did a really, there's like one joke in particular, you referenced your diaphragm and you dragged your arm across your stomach and you looked dead in the camera. And I just thought, oh, she knows exactly what she's doing. There's a confidence there that really just said you're along for the ride or you're not, and if you're not, then get out.
Oh, thank you. Sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the confidence thing, it's taken some time, but I know that, you know, for sure, like it's hilarious thinking of just when you're watching someone too, it's like if they're not confident, then you're kind of nervous, and then so I'm, you know, trying to just be like, hey everybody, it's fine.
Yeah.
Someone's driving. It's okay.
Well, even though those butterflies are still there, obviously all the time, even if they're less pronounced than they were, you know, a couple of years ago, how do you overcome that? What were the steps that you took in order to go, okay, this isn't, you know, besides someone going, you do this all the time, this isn't as big a deal as what it once was. What are you doing to overcome that?
Sure. Yeah. I think what's helped is like just living longer, getting older, being like, oh yeah. You know, I mean, there were times when, you know, you think like, oh man, this stand-up set was so bad, or everybody talks about bombing, and it's like you just really have to get back up. And I think it's the same thing for bigger deal sets too. It's like I've had sets taped where I felt like, oh, I didn't do so well, I wanted that to be better, or like in the room it was better, the taping didn't turn out so well because of just the way sometimes things get translated in a taping. And then what I learned is like, you just keep living and no, you don't die immediately, even if the internet wants you to. And you keep going, and people forget. And maybe, you know, like the only person really focusing on my, you know, show that I had that didn't go so well is me, because I feel like, yeah, everybody moves on. And so I just try to be like, yeah, it's gonna be fine, you know. And especially now, there's so much content on the internet. Of course, everybody talks about that. But then for, excuse me, for like now, if you put up a clip on Instagram or TikTok, like it's got like a day where people will be like, oh yeah, yeah, like that's funny, that's great. And then, you know, there's a million other things they could watch tomorrow. So I think it's kind of refreshing to be like, okay, cool. It's pretty fleeting now. Like people are putting up footage way more frequently, of course, because you kind of have to, if you want to like build your audience. And that's like a lot more pressure, and a lot, it requires you to be a little bit more prolific on the crowd work. But yeah, I think, you know, it definitely takes the stakes way down, which I kind of am like, oh, relieved, in the sense of like, nothing you put out there is like really going to be that long lasting. So that's bad if it's really good, I guess, because you want it that to do well. But if it's bad, hey, people will forget.
Yeah. And you know, but I think you, especially with Funt, you thrive in a world where all the jokes are kind of interconnected, but you could take them separately and put them on TikTok and Instagram. And speaking of that pressure, does that, if, like with it being fleeting, do you ever think about, hey, how this object permanence could come back, and you know, this one joke could really be a hit if the right, you know, a set of people find it?
Yeah. I mean, I, you know, that's always the hope, I guess, is that you're like, okay, man, I, you know, I'm posting this, you know, today, let's hope all the people are online who like this particular topic, who don't have kids and think that's, you know, funny, I guess. I don't know. I think there's like a lot of, especially if you have a joke that you really like there's, you know, it used to be, you could tell it for 20 years and no one would ever know, because you're just performing live. And you know, I mean, I would still see, like, you know, some of the comics still perform their same sets and like, hey, it works. And it's a new 50 people every night. So who cares? But with posting, it does feel like a little bit weird to maybe repost the same bits. So you're kind of like, oh, this is the day. Hopefully somebody finds it, you know. But no, I think I'm also being a little less precious about stuff too. You know, I think it teaches you to be like, hey, that was a great joke and you wrote it, but that just means you can write more. So get back to work. And hopefully, you know, it hits the right people at the right time. But if not, you know, you'll have something else for them. So yeah, it's just a little bit more demanding, but I think more yeah, it's good. I think it's good for comedy writing out there as far as like making you, yeah, just need to rise to the occasion.
I you mentioned posting the same bit just like in passing. I think that'd be a really good experiment for a comedian to try to get like post like the skeleton of something, and then over the next course of their next five performances and they're building on it, just keep posting that and like a different version, like little iterations, and make people not make people but like see if people can see the differences in the five postings. I think that'd be a really interesting thing to do once, not more than once, but just once.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's kind of like everybody wants authenticity in social media now. So it's a little bit like peek behind the curtain, you know, people maybe who are interested in doing stand up would be, you know, learn something from, oh yeah, that's the process there. Nobody comes out fully baked. So that's cool.
Now, this might be a loaded question, but do you like TikTok? Do you like Instagram? Because it's your stuff is posted there and it does well and it works for you. But just if you didn't have to do it, would you want to do it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I always try to stay pretty open-minded with the new like thing, right? And you know, we've seen YouTube kind of come up, and maybe that was I was much younger, but I think when I was still doing stand-up at a certain point, and I remember like outside the comedy store, there were like billboards of YouTubers, so, like people like when that was fresh and was like, you know, Hannah Hart or like, you know, people, Grace Daly, where people who really had like just built their comedy presence in their bedroom, you know, or whatever, in their apartment, and everybody who was trucking out to the comedy store and paying for parking and waiting for their names to get drawn for the open mic, we're all like, oh man, like we're all pissed about it because it was like, ah, oh, they, you know, they have a billboard and I'm here, you know, doing this every day. Like they're that's not real. But anyway, so I think I clocked the fact that like there's always going to be resistance to the new thing, of course. And I get that too. And I, you know, I didn't start till later in the game, I think, because there's a little bit of like, oh, that's not something that we do, you know, and I didn't have a ton of footage that I was taking all the time, right? Versus, you know, so sometimes I remember in the past you would go out and oh, set up your tripod and your camera. It's kind of embarrassing. You're and everybody's like, oh, you think you're gonna be good tonight? You're gonna tape it, right? Oh yeah, sorry. You know, and now it's so commonplace that I don't feel that same embarrassment, which is nice, right? Like before I sometimes I would even bring my tripod and not set it up because I was like, I don't know. This is not the right night. I don't know. And then, oh, I didn't tape it. Damn it, you know. But then now, yeah, everybody does it all the time. So you really have no like qualms about it. And then yeah, and I think like okay, so the pros that I've noticed, I discovered a lot more comedians as a fan, you know, like people who have never I'm pretty much just around LA, so you know, maybe you would learn of some New York comics that come and visit or people who come and visit, but there are a lot of comics who I feel like are in great cities, you know, just staying in whatever city, don't feel the obligation to move to LA or New York, which I think is totally fair because they're building a huge audience online on social media, in a great spot where they can get a lot of stage time and you know, have a great cross section of audience. So I think that's really fun. I think, yeah, the downside is like you're just constantly pumping out stuff and there's not a lot of breaks, you know, and it does feel very like, oh, well, if I don't get one out today, then I guess I lose the momentum. And that's a little bit weird of a way to think of creativity. Like, I think you should be able to take breaks and it kind of demands that you know, have ebbs and flows. So it's kind of, yeah, so it's weird to kind of treat it like a bit more systematic of being like, okay, Monday we got to post it and we got to do it, and then you got to make sure you comment, you know what I mean? Then you got to put the hashtag. So that is a weird angle to it, but yeah, I think I'm just trying to stay very, hey, like let's not be the guy grumbling about the billboard, the YouTube billboard.
I like that attitude. I like that approach. But it's just in mentioning the momentum and like keeping and maintaining the audience and everything in that world. I think watching your special when it cut away to the audience, You have a very diverse audience, and it seems that you're able to reach enough people from the LA area and beyond, outside the LA area too, to drag them in and drag them. I'm sorry, that's not the right word. To bring them
Drag them.
into, to
Kicking
bring
and
them into
screaming
the,
now.
yeah, exactly. Oh God, they don't want to be there at all. But like to sit there and watch you do comedy, and it makes sense. Because you are who you are. You're just a very affable person on stage. But you did mention that you do read in the special, you mentioned that you do read some of the bad comments. Does that like how does that feel for you to see, some jerk ass online, write the most mundane thing that in a lot of cases, 99% of the time, is wrong.
No, yeah, I love I feel like a lot of people now and comedians, the comments, that's where you're getting a lot of feedback, maybe unwanted. But yeah, throughout like the YouTube comments were always a thing, and now it's kind of Instagram, TikTok. I've noticed, I feel like, and maybe, anecdotally, TikTok seems like a little bit nicer. I feel like it's maybe younger, and then maybe there's more censorship
Really?
on it or whatever. But
Okay.
maybe it's because, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe I'll say that, and then I'll get one tomorrow, and I'll be like, "No, Chad, revise what I said." But I think, it's always like, it's interesting. I would say if it's really like about looks or hateful stuff, that's like, who care? That's like, clearly this person has a problem. It doesn't bother me as much. But if it's like, oh, things that I already kind of believe about myself or I'm insecure about already, then those are the ones that hit. So if it's like, oh, like, that's not, or that's not funny, sure, that's like annoying, but that's kind of common. But the ones that, oh, I know, like, and I think it's like sometimes ones where they don't get the joke, and you're kind of like, oh, I wish I could, I really try not to respond because I think that's just so tacky. But I think it's like, if they're like, oh wow, this is actually like, if I'm making a joke where I'm trying to either tackle some topic that's like, oh, I have I for instance, I'll give a more solid example, like the one where I'm talking about like, it oh, I have a degree in computer science, but then I like, I'm a comedian, and so that was kind of from the idea that like, oh, I didn't want to be another Asian computer scientist, but that was really like internalized racism, really, and then that cost me lots of money, so obviously it's bad. And so I think my takeaway from that is like, see, bad racism, bad, you know what I mean? Internalized racism doesn't always, that's not good. But sometimes people will interpret that joke as it's like purely just racist, I guess. Like, they'll be like, oh, well, this sets us back by being like Asians or computer scientists. And I'm like, oh, well, I think that's actually what I'm trying to say is bad. But it's like, I don't want to respond to that because, again, I don't do that. But I think that, I think those hurt the most because sometimes it's from within your community and you're like, oh no, I'm trying to make it so that you laugh. I'm not trying to hurt you, And so I think those are the ones that are the toughest. But I've heard that from other people too, where it's like you kind of don't care if it's from somebody who's like, oh, I wouldn't even get along with that person anyway. But if it's someone from like your own family, you're like, oh no, but I'm trying to do this for you. What's going on? So I think that's the tough one.
Yeah, I that's an excellent way to put it. And I guess it's just like the jadedness in me where I don't want someone to point out my flaws. Like I know I have them, all right? And I promise I'm working on them at some point in the future, but right now, let me live with the worst parts of myself.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's exactly, you put that perfectly. It's like, please, I know, trust me, I'm the one who would be commenting that, but I, leave me alone.
Now, I noticed I saw this trailer. It is the Roots of Comedy with is it Jesus Trejo?
Yeah, Jesus, I think.
Jesus. Okay.
Yeah.
I was reading it and I was like, it's say Jesus, but I don't want to be again
Oh
internalized
yeah.
racism. I don't want to be
Oh no, good.
that
Yeah. It could be, it's spelled the same,
What was the what's the what's this what do people have to look forward to for this doc and like what do you talk about in there? You don't have to give too much away, but what was the experience like for you?
Oh man, so fun. Yeah. So this is like a docuseries where Jesus goes on like to different cities, which are the hometowns really of these separate comedians. I can't remember how many, maybe seven, where Yeah, he like kind of gets down to the root of like what their comedy is, and a lot of that is maybe family, maybe just their heritage or what they do for work on the side. You know, it's a really like cool, diverse group of comedians, not just in like background heritage, but like what they do and like interests. Like it's cool.
Yeah.
And I've met some of them, but a lot of them I'm just a fan of, and obviously live in different cities, so I maybe don't cross paths with them as much, but. And then Jesus is like the heart and the host of it all. So he really like, you know, interviews and talks to us, but like he was such a great, so for my episode, I guess, which is really the only thing I know much about, we were back here in Los Angeles. He's from here, I'm from here. So that was really cool. But we're from like different parts of Los Angeles. So obviously a huge city, diverse city. And then, you know, like we kind of talked about my family history because I also am like kind of fourth generation Southern California
Yeah.
person. So like we talk about my dad's side and my mom's side, Chinese American, Japanese American, but like fourth generation. So like lots of
Yeah.
cool Asian American history in there. And you know, we talk about kind of like what even just like my parents, I think were interviewed a bit and about like, well, you know, what do you think was going on when she was starting this so young? Why'd you guys let her do that?
Wow.
No, so yeah, very like in the deep history of why we do this a little bit. And yeah, and I'm very excited to see the other episodes, honestly, because I have no idea really other than what everyone knows. So I think it'll be just like a great watch where it's like, oh, different thing each time and funny and you know, good stories. So
Yeah.
I'm excited to see it.
Since you grew up in SoCal, what kind of places do you like to eat at? What's your favorite place to go to if you just need to pick up something in a pinch or someplace you need to sit down at?
Ooh, yes, difficult question. So I mean, I grew up going really a lot to like San Gabriel Valley area of
Okay.
Southern California, which is like, you know, a little outside Los Angeles, but heavily Chinese American. My grandma lived out there, so we would always eat at like Capital Seafood, which is in Monterey Park, and Great Dim Sum. So I feel like in that area is kind of like becoming more popular now. So there's like way more restaurants, all different kinds of Chinese food that like normally I would probably be in more like the Cantonese Chinese food
Yeah.
type restaurants. But there's so many regions, so there's so much more that I'm even getting introduced to as an adult. And yeah, I would say that, yeah, that's probably the go-to. But there's also really good, you know, Japanese food in Little Tokyo that I would grow up going to, and then, you know, just great tacos everywhere. So I don't know. It's such a great, like, it's I can't imagine living anywhere else for, I know like there's really so many great cities for food.
Yeah.
But I think it's funny when people are like, oh, LA, like where do I go eat? I'm like, oh, where do we begin? You know,
Yeah.
how much time do you have?
Yeah.
So
I have a Google Maps list of, all the cities I want to go to, New York, LA, whatever.
oh,
And
nice.
I'll always put in, if I hear about something good, I'll go, okay, well, this place is in LA or in the LA area, and I'll just add it to the list. And
Ooh.
now that list is, I think, at like 15 or something. So I'm
Oh,
always
good.
just raring to go. That was just for me. That one question, just for
Oh,
me.
hey,
Just for
yeah.
the
I mean,
audience.
you can't go wrong anywhere, and you know, you're referred to or really anywhere in that area. But where are you based?
I'm in Atlanta, and so
Oh, okay,
the food
nice.
here is like all Southern, fatty, heavy stuff like that. And so whenever we get something, I'm in the old Fourth Ward, which is kind of like the Brooklyn of Atlanta,
Oh, cool.
essentially. And it is more or less, and it's Midtown area. So we have a good amount of places. Some places were on the Michelin list this year. They came to Atlanta for the first time. They added places on the Michelin list. There's but we have food halls and everything. So that's where you'll find, that's where I'll finally be able to find some decent Mexican or Cuban, rather,
Oh,
some
cool.
decent Japanese, some decent Chinese, but we don't have as centralized of places that you can go and find Cantonese food or anything beyond, just sushi. I want to be able to find that stuff. So you have to do some deep Googling.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I'm sure it'll get more and more, but for sure. I mean, the it's always interesting, like what different foods are places, because here, I mean, the only reason there's great, and there's obviously amazing Korean food too. I think it's Koreatown is the biggest in the US or whatever, and then the I think it's the biggest Chinese population in San Gabriel Valley. It's just really sprawling is why. But so yeah, so that's why we have all that, of course. But I know in the South there's a lot of Vietnamese food I'm barely familiar with, but yeah, that's very cool.
There's a an area northeast of me or northwest, I think northeast, and it is Chamblee, Georgia, I guess it was called. And there's literally just a long stretch of road where it is all just Asian-based food, and you can't walk it. You have to drive it because it's all
Oh,
highway lanes. But
wow.
that's where you get the diverse amount of different cultured foods that aren't like of Eastern style foods
Yeah.
that you can't find anywhere else. And I don't go up there too often, but every so often I like to poke my head around and get some sweet donuts up there, or
Ooh.
get some good pho or something. That's my style.
No, that's great. I mean, and I will say Southern food is probably the best. So
Okay.
I also would be I'm a big fan. I mean, I've never been to Atlanta, but I've my fiance is from Memphis, so we will go and get like dry rub and all that great
Yeah.
barbecue and like yeah, I feel like it's like oh yeah, this is something we're definitely missing in Southern California. Not a ton. There are some great places, but it's a little few and far between.
Yeah,
That's
I
why I
always
went somewhere
say
else.
this. I say this on first dates all the time, is that I think people should go on first dates to a Memphis style barbecue, just something that's messy and that you can just get like,
Oh.
so you can really see what that person is and who they are as they eat, a pile of ribs.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. That's a good tactic. Kind of, yeah, it's like everyone's human, you can bring them back down to earth if you were like putting them on a pedestal.
Yeah. Well, Sierra, I don't want to waste too much more of your time. I very much appreciate you talking to me. This has been a fantastic conversation, and I've been hunting you down for 3 years, and now I've finally got you.
Oh my God. Thank you for talking with me. I mean, this is really fun. And I feel like, yeah, you have such a amazing like interview legacy. So I'm very excited to be added to that list.
Thank you. Well, I do what I can. And congratulations on Funt. Congratulations on Roots of Comedy being featured in there. And I hope no more of your shows get pulled off from streaming services,
Oh,
because I
yeah.
never got to finish Earth to Ned, which is
Oh.
unfortunate.
Hopefully it'll resurface sometime. But yeah, I know it's an unfortunate trend.
And Close Enough too. Jesus, that show was
I know, I know.
just so good.
Yeah, so silly. Well, yeah, hopefully, but there will be more on the way. Oh, I actually it was just announced the one that I just finished writing for. It's Golden Axe. Keep an eye out in 2025. It's
Okay.
based on a Sega video game. So hopefully that
Yeah.
one will go up. Comedy
The
Central.
Comedy Central. Okay. Yeah. I saw that. I saw the press release for that. It was emailed me a couple of days ago. So I
Oh,
will keep an
yay.
eye out for that. And congratulations. I love that game. I wasn't very good
So
at it,
fun.
but
It's a little hard. It's a little hard. It's okay. The TV show will be easier.
easy to get into. You
Yeah.
have a great weekend, and
You
again,
too.
congrats. All right.
Oh, thank you.
See ya.